Let me see. Okay. Apologies. So I'd like to welcome everyone to the meeting. Hopefully everyone can hear me clearly. Everyone should ensure their mobile telephones are turned off or switched to silent, and the use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussions of in-committee items. Members of the public and press must refrain from using the instant messaging facility during the meeting, and anyone found to be doing so will be given a warning. Failing to adhere to the guidelines for a second time will result in being removed from the meeting. I would remind members of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the chamber or hang up from the call for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussions on that item is ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where Council is considered any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system on the computer, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. Please ensure if you wish to speak on an item, either in the chamber or via Teams, use the chat facility to indicate your wish to speak, and I will bring members in as listed. I would remind members to keep their instant messages to the following letters. Type Q if you wish to ask a question, or C for a comment. Type P if you wish to propose. Type S if you wish to second. Please refrain from making any other comments using the instant messaging. If you need to leave the meeting early, please indicate via chat facility so that we're aware this is an active decision, does not indicate connectivity problems. So I want to start off welcoming the representatives from NI Water and NIE. We'll start off with item one, apologies, and Chairperson, yeah, apologies. So is there any apologies?
Yes, Chair, we have apologies from Councillors Lee Surgener, Councillor Tinley, and Marie Ward, the Chief Executive.
Thank you. Item number two is declarations of interest. Any at all from anyone?
None, Chair.
Okay. And item number three, I believe, is going to be the presentation from Nigel Crawford. You can belt away, Nigel.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me this evening. As I say, on behalf of NI Networks, I feel it's really great that we're able to come and speak to you. We have three or four slides each that we want to talk about, and then hopefully give plenty of time at the end for a conversation. Then if you move on to the next slide, please. So the team that are going to be with us tonight is myself, Nigel Crawford. I'm the Connections Manager within NI Networks. We have Andrew Couples, who's the Network Development Manager, and also Ian Craig, who's the Major Project Stakeholder Lead. Next slide, thanks. Again, this is just a very brief background of who we are, what we do. So as you can see, NI Networks, we own and manage the electricity network. We have over 1,200 employees, and there's hundreds of others through contractors, direct contracts and subcontracts. We're regulated by the utility regulator, and from an electricity perspective, you know, we play a key role in what's going to be supporting the climate action and delivering a net zero carbon future going into the future. If you look along the bottom, you know, our role is to be an enabler of the energy transmission system and to try to make things happen. Next slide, Amanda, please. This is really just a very brief slide from an energy transition as we move to that net zero. From our perspective, the view we're taking is customers must be central to that message, and the transition must meet the needs of the customers both now and into the future. You know, we have to have a downward pressure on energy costs for both the commercial and domestic premises, our customers. But we do have options. and some options that are going to support the energy transition and minimise the impact it caused while also contributing positively to the economy, which I think is very, very important given the climate that we're in at the minute. And I'd just like to pass on to Andrew, and Andrew will go through a couple of slides, if that's okay.
Thanks, Nigel. Evening, folks. I suppose on this slide, look, as it calls out, our vision for NIE Networks is delivering a sustainable energy system for all. And what that is really about is making sure that the network, the electricity network, enables our customers to connect their electric vehicles, their heat pumps, their solar panels to deliver the decarbonisation of the energy sector. And most importantly, at the least possible cost there as well. So what that involves, look, as well, is kind of conventional reinforcement that we would do on the network, things like new cables, new overhead lines, bigger substations, all that kind of thing. We're also moving towards operating a smarter and more flexible energy system. So things like using active network management, using flexibility, using more dynamic tariffs, and getting into data and digitalization is a really crucial part. And that has really informed our investment plan, which we launched recently, and that's for the period 2025 out to 2031. And as you can see there, there's a big ramp up. Our current regulatory period, known as RP6, we're investing about $1.4 billion. And we propose then from 2025 out to 2031, we need to invest around $2.7 billion to ensure that the network is fit to cope with all these low carbon technologies that are coming on board and to facilitate greater network capacity, access and reliability. So customers who are looking connections for their electric vehicles can get that at a fair cost and speed and that kind of thing. And for all other customers who are connected to the network, even if you're not connecting or doing anything different with the network, that you'll get that reliable and safe and secure supply of electricity for years to come. Next slide, please. And as we develop the business plan, the RP7 business plan from 2020-25, as we developed that out, we undertook extensive forecasting and modelling work to understand what the future scenarios would look like right out to 2050. So there's a lot of detail on the slide. You can read through around our sources and our assumptions for those forecasts. But ultimately, our best view in 2030 is really what we're working towards at the minute, is that by that stage, we can have around 300,000 electric vehicles on our roads in Northern Ireland and around 120,000 heat pumps by that stage. There is certain there's different scenarios that feed into that, but that's our best view at this stage, and that is then what's driving that extensive intervention and investment across our network, right across all the voltage levels, right down from the cables in your street, right up to our major substations. So I'll pass over to Ian now to describe some of the specific initiatives that we're involved with.
Thanks, Andrew. Did that unmute okay there?
Yep.
Okay, evening, folks. As I say, my name's Ian Craig, and the role I have now is called Major Project Stakeholder for NIE Networks. And really, my role is really like an engagement between large stakeholders such as large energy users, developers, and local councils. Anybody wishing to connect to the distribution network, or if they already have a connection and are contemplating a change to the usage, I like to try and be involved as early as possible in that decision making process. So at a very high level, I'll be able to give some guidance on the options for various connections, timescales and costings being the two main items. Once we get down to the finer detail, I can facilitate a link between the applicant and the NIE network design and planning functions. So if we look at the EV action plan, so following the path to net zero energy, the executive energy strategy, it was adopted by NIE executive in December 21. The EV infrastructure task force was established. And that group consists of both members drawn from public and from private organisations such as the CBI, the Consumer Council, DfE, Derry City Strabane District Council, EVA, NI, ESB, ourselves, the regulator. The objectives of the task force are to represent the views of EV drivers, consumers, energy providers and the government on EV infrastructure requirements. Also consider the EV infrastructure requirements for NI and advise on how those requirements should be best addressed. Ensure the decarbonisation of transport is set within context of the wider transport hierarchy, which reflects the need to reduce travel. prioritise active travel measurements and public transport, and advise on how to encourage behavioural change towards EVs and increase consumer confidence in making the transition. Now, that task force, the key role for it was to develop an action plan by autumn 22. So the link is on your screen there now. If you follow it, that'll take you to the action plan. It's actually quite an easy document to read, and it's well laid out. And what it does, it addresses six areas of action and asks the same four questions of each area. So what it's saying is that what's the current position? What's the issue? What action needs to be taken? And what's the timeline? So those action plans, six of them are future-proofing electric capacity at key strategic sites along the key transport corridors, review of connection charges, paying to charge, EV infrastructure coordination group, consumer priorities, and EV charging at park and ride sites. The next item there was the on-street residential charge point schemes. Now, that's something that happened last year, and we had, you know, almost 200 applications came in from the on-street residential charging, and those we had a look at those from a feasibility point of view to try and determine was there any point going forward with them or not from a cost perspective and from a technical perspective. So out of those there, we were determined about 140 of those were feasible to connect, and then we take that on to the next process if they wanted a full offer. So again, that was a scheme where we were informed up front as to what was happening, and we were able to, you know, get a bit of a head start on what was required, and we were able to give some guidance on what we felt about some of the locations. There are a number of other schemes coming down the pipeline regards that. We then hopefully are going to launch a new service on the website where members of the public will be able to go on and determine where they are on the NIE map. And from that there, for the few tools, be able to sort of get an estimation of what a likely charge would be to connect onto the system. But that's still in the pipeline at the moment.
Thanks, Ian. Thanks, Andrew. Next slide, Linda, please. And this really is the last slide that we had, and it's really, you know, how can you guys help us? And I suppose from our perspective, we see the role within the councils really is supporting our proactive communication with customers, especially during storms, major projects, planned maintenance, etc. We also have a dedicated number, you know, that councillors are able to contact into our call centre. Hopefully it should have been issued. Everybody should have it, and certainly make use of it. And then finally, is support for vulnerable customers, and try to promote, you know, the use of the medical customer care register. Certainly from that, you know, we're trying to create a list of, you know, residents within your borough, for instance, that have, you know, medical needs. That if we can support them during outages, if there's things that we can do, you know, certainly that's what we want to try and do. So again, it's trying to raise the awareness of this service and every other service that we utilise within NIE networks. I think, Linda, that was all of the slides that we wanted to present, but I think from our perspective, it was really a good opportunity. If there was any specific questions that anybody maybe from hearing the presentation wanted to raise with either Andrew, Ian or myself, that we could answer.
Hi, Nigel. Councillor Michael Savage here. Sorry for my lateness this evening. I was held up at another meeting, and thanks, Dee, for starting the meeting for us. Members, I'm going to take you in as per the chat. Thank you very much, Nigel, Andrew and Ian, for your presentation. It was very informative. Councillor Sharvin, you have a comment?
Yeah, Chair. It's not actually in relation to the presentation. It's more to thank Nigel. I don't think I actually did it. Over the last number of months, he was a great help with an issue up at Malone Way and Park Lane, which was causing a lot of delay. So it was more just to thank Nigel and his team for the listening to me moan, I suppose, as regularly as what I did to him and his team. So I just want to put it on record to him and his team. Thank you.
No problem.
Thanks, Harold.
Harold.
Yes, Chair. Listening to what's happening here, planning for 300,000 charging points, 120,000 heat pumps and so on. Just wondering, there's other private, if we look at caravan sites, and they're planning a future plan for electric vehicles. And they're also planning for early days bit of research into providing a charging point at each caravan. Now, is there a concern that if you did put one at each caravan, I don't honestly know, there could be 500 caravans, there could be 1,500, but, you know, have we got the electric infrastructure even to do the 300,000 you're talking about, but say you head up for all for the one direction, have we got electric infrastructure there that would provide those power supplies for each of those caravans, which would become cars, I take it, that would be the plan, so that's just to create. Thank you.
Yeah, I can take that one. Yeah, I suppose right now today, like, you know, that there's parts of the grid that we don't have that capacity, and we will have to invest to upgrade and improve the network. And that's where probably the crucial point across all this is that customers inform us and engage with us as much as possible of what their future plans are around specifically, you know, both domestic and those kind of larger installations. We can do all the modelling that we can. You know, we can model out, you know, where people commute, whether they're likely to charge at home, at work, where the tourist hotspots are, where you're the like of, you know, caravan sites where there's likely to be large demands. But yeah, it's key that we kind of engage and are made aware of those so that we can invest in the network so that we can cope with those going forward.
Okay.
Just another wee quick one, just to add on. Is there any such thing as government funding? Assistance for financing if the caravan men were to do that themselves. Obviously they will, like, they'll install that equipment, but just the question was, is there any funding out there?
There certainly has been grants and things in the past for installing charge points. I don't believe there are any at present, but certainly part of the Department for the Economy work, you know, around enabling electrification and decarbonisation, like, I would imagine that's something that they would be considering in that space.
Okay,
Hank.
Get on, thanks, yeah.
Councillor Andrews.
Thanks so much, Chair. Just a wee pointer. I know everybody's talking about, you know, electric vehicles, and especially with charging points, and the provision of them, you know. And I'm just wondering what NIE's stance is with the rollout and enhancement of the infrastructure and putting in place and supporting the infrastructure which we're at the moment. But apart from that, I'd like to thank you for coming along tonight, and also to your call handling staff and management. You know, if ever there's any queries or problems, you know, they've been sorted out quickly. That's, and I'd like to put on record my appreciation to you. Thank you.
Yeah, just a quick response to that one. I suppose, yeah, the infrastructure is going to be crucial. One of the things we are looking at with the like of new housing developments and where we're installing new infrastructure today, part of our outlook on that is to ensure that's kind of fit for the future, so that low growth that's going to occur over the next 10, 20, 30 years, that those assets are fit for it, so that we don't have to go back in and change them and replace them again and again.
Andrew, thank you very much. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Andrew. Councillor Riley.
Yeah, thanks very much. One of the concerns I've found from the business community down here is, could the power infrastructure that supplies the Mourns area cope with new developments? And the smart meter issue, how advanced is that now in Northern Ireland, and or will it ever happen here? But certainly the power infrastructure that serves the Mourns area, you know, you're talking there about massive increase in car charging points and that type of thing, when there is a concern that our system here is so fragile that if you had a big company wanted to set up that was going to use a lot of electricity, could it go ahead with the present infrastructure? That's it. Thank you.
I suppose, look, it's probably a similar point. The grid right across the network will require investment and reinforcement to facilitate electrification, and, you know, part of our model, and it will inform, you know, precisely what substation. You know, we have a major substation in Newry. We have We have big substations, you know, Newcastle, Ross Trevor, Kilkeel, right across the Moorings area. And look, we, as required, we will invest in those. I suppose, in terms of large commercial customers and that kind of thing, we are aware that our charging methodology in Northern Ireland does differ slightly from GB and the south of Ireland in that connecting customers are generally liable for the costs of any reinforcement or associated with their new connection. And we welcome the utility regulator committing to review those arrangements so that the costs could be more evenly spread there. Just touching on the smart meter piece, we have done a pilot recently around 1,000 smart meters spread right across the country. That has been very successful and given us good insights. The Department for the Economy has also recently been running a cost-benefit analysis, which will feed into the wider rollout. And we are well positioned, you know, once they give that the green light, to begin that rollout to all customers.
Okay, thank you. Councillor McAteer.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Nigel and Andrew, again, for your presentation. First of all, I think Nigel may recall, I think last year, at the same meeting, actually, me raising queries, which he did follow up on, and I want to thank them for their work, because I don't think I got the opportunity to do that. I know there was extensive line work carried out on lines where birds were nesting, or were actually congregating on lines in the burn area, and caused a lot of fouling in houses and cars, etc. And there was quite an extensive bit of work done there, which I believe is from what I can see, working quite well. So I just thank you for that follow-up from this meeting as well on that. So that's a thanks, by the way. So move on to the other questions. See, I'm talking to a few people locally with commercial connections and new, you know, business requiring high power supply. So I understand it seems that there are quite a lot of delays because of lack of manpower. So just wondering, you know, how that'll impact, because we constantly get phone calls and, you know, oh, we're looking at months here waiting to connect it up, new transformers in or whatever. So I just wonder, how is that going to improve or not? And the other thing is, again, following up actually from last year, Nigel asked a question about Days Hill Hospital and the enhanced supply to that. So now that it seems that the Trust have finally, a Trust on Health, Department of Health have finally decided to go ahead with this, albeit them dropping the request a number of years ago, they seem to now have reinvigorated that request again or regenerated it. So I wonder now, how long do you think it'll take to do that, to get that power supply or the infrastructure in to be able to provide that? And will it be in the short term or long term?
Yeah, I'll pick up both of those. Probably in relation to Daisy Hill, it probably is going to be in the longer term. To be honest, I did see that recently in the press regarding the confirmation that they were going to progress the work. I do believe, however, you know, the comments I made previously about the work that was going to be involved, it still is going to be a number of years before that will be ready. From the press release, I can't recall, was it 27 or 28?
Yeah, between now and 2028 was the estimated. But I think, can I just maybe come in on that, because I sit on the Daisy Hill Futures Group and we discussed this week, Nigel. The talk was of this being done in an incremental way, that capacity can be built up. Is that correct?
It would be, yes.
Right. So, being the final piece in the jigsaw as such, but we would be talking about building up capacity between now and 2020. Would that be the right way of thinking on this?
Yeah, it can be done on a phased approach depending on what work's involved. Typically, any time that we have to change circuit breakers at main substations, that's where the longest lead time would be for planting infrastructure. So I can certainly follow up with that to see what stage it's at. I do believe, I think last year, the application had lapsed, but I'll try and follow up to see where that is now.
Yeah,
your consultant, I can't remember the exact consultant that was involved at that time.
Yeah, I think the urgent need there is really capacity for power supply for what is effectively the diagnostic suite, which is the MRI scanner. And, you know, that's very important for what is effectively the long-term future for the hospital in relation to the electoral, the elective surgery hub that we're talking about. So, you know, we would be interested in, as councillors in trying to progress that priorities given to that element of it, that we're able to safeguard that element of investment for our local hospital, given the news that's been outlined today in relation to emergency surgery. So, you know, we would want to see a partnership developed here between the statutory bodies, the organisations like yourselves, and obviously the departments of government. I think Councillor McAteer is right to raise this, but just as a member of that TC Health Futures Group, I wanted clarity in that, and that it was incremental, and if we can get the main need, which is for getting power for that diagnostic unit done as quickly as possible. But I think that's the target we should all be aiming for.
Just before maybe you answer the other question that I asked about the manpower thing. Yeah, I do think it's worth actually spelling that out really in public, you know, because there's been a lot of angst about the ambulance service, for example, and the availability of ambulances. And I remember being given the figures that the fact that there was no MRI in Newry and no power supply to do it, that was necessitating average of 5 ambulance calls a day, which were taking patients to Craigavon, while that service, if it was in Newry, would have freed up that space and time for those ambulances in Newry. So I do think, and that's why I brought it up tonight, in that if there's any way at all that can be seen to be bringing this forward, with a view to that, because it will help us all, you know, in this area. It's, you know, looking out to 2028, to me, isn't really dealing with the situation, how urgently that is the community is suffering on the back of all this. So I just emphasise that. And again, to what the Chair of Council has said, maybe there's room for a meeting here on this to see what more can be done around this.
Like what I would be keen potentially would be, I'm not speaking for the group, but as a member of that Daisy Hill Futures group, which has done a lot of work on trying to secure the long-term future of the hospital and its role. And, you know, this is one of the issues we flagged up. And I know that a lot of the pressure that group has brought on government departments has led to that announcement of the 9 million in recent weeks. But we'd be keen to progress things in the interim and in the coming months would be to sit down with yourselves and see what political support can be given at grassroots level and at assembly level to try and ensure that the tools are provided for you guys to be able to do the work that's required, both finance and the infrastructure element of it. I think there's, you know, as lay people who don't understand how you'd put a power supply into a hospital, I think it's very important that we do sit down with you and see what obstacles there are to getting this done as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I've absolutely no objections. What I would suggest, I presume that you would have an electrical consultant who would be acting on your behalf or the hospital's behalf. It's probably best if, you know, if they can make direct contact with me, providing the job number that they've made the application through, what their load details requirements are, and I can certainly follow that up.
No problem. Thanks very much, Nigel.
Okay, so if you want to pass on my direct details, email or...
I'll forward your contact details to the Daisy Health Future Group and I'll get Connor, whoever it is, to contact you on it, but it's very important. We work in partnership in this to try and deliver it as quickly as possible. Councillor McAteer, you had another question.
I
think it was to do with the time scales for the construction work. And I suppose typically our construction work is from an application comes through and we get the terms accepted, then we have to go through to get the survey completed, if it's an overhead line perhaps, and then permissions off the third party landowner. So that in itself can take some time from a construction period. If everything is ready, we're typically looking between 8 to 12 weeks from whenever it's cleared the construction until whenever we're able to get onto the ground to do the work. Now there may be some locations that it's slightly outside that time scales. And again, what I would suggest, if there are any that you're aware of that are outside that time scale, to certainly give me direct contact and I can try and follow them up.
Thanks very much, Nigel. No doubt you will. Thank you.
Councillor Larkin.
Thanks, Chair. Initially, what I was going to raise was covered there by Declan and Michael. The concerns that have been raised with myself from residents in relation to the timescale relating to the upgrade at Daisy Hill, but that's been covered, so I'm happy enough, and thanks Declan and Michael for raising that. The only other thing that I wanted to mention was I wanted to thank you, yourselves, NIE, for the upgrade to the network in Drummond Tee, which was completed the week before Christmas. It did begin in 2019, but then was delayed due to the pandemic, but the engineers returned in December, and within a matter of weeks, they had that upgrade completed, and it's much appreciated, the investment within Drummond Tee. And I'd like to thank your engineers, and also Suzanne O'Kane and our predecessor, Kelly, at Customer Care, for all their help over the last couple of years to get that delivered. So thanks very much for that.
Okay, thanks, Councillor Lorgan. I don't see any more comments or questions from members, so all that remains for me to do is to thank Nigel, Andrew and Ian for their input tonight, and their time, and for their excellent presentation. I think you've garnered from the members tonight here that we're very supportive of what you do, and we're very grateful for the work that has been carried out, and we're very supportive of what you're trying to achieve over the coming weeks, months and years, and we hope to work in partnership with you to deliver what you're setting out to do in that time scale. So all that remains for me to do is to thank you very much for your attendance tonight, and hopefully we will keep in regular contact as things progress. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we're happy to move on to item number 4, which is Northern Ireland Water, and I'm glad to welcome Ronan Larkin, Director of Finance, and Dr. Steve Brockwell, Head of Investment Management tonight. You're both very welcome. I was going to ask if you got a presentation, but yeah, I see one in front of me there. So, Ronan, are you taking this? Or?
Yes, thank you. Good evening, Chair, and good evening, Councillors. Thank you very much for extending your invitation to us to come along and present with you tonight. I was very struck just listening in and watching the NIE Networks presentation, the parallels between the two utilities. Some of the things they're dealing with are very similar to what we're dealing with and looking at the moment as well. And right across Northern Ireland, and certainly not least within your own region. But we'll run through a presentation. So you can see there myself and Steve Brockwell will join you this evening, and I'll begin the presentation, and then I'll pass across to Steve at some point. And then hopefully at this time at the end we can do some Q&A. Okay, so look, let's begin. Who's operating the slides? Is Steve, are you doing that, or is one of the councillors doing that, or one of the staff?
Steve, I think Steve's operating.
Yeah, Steve. Yep, there we are. Well, I should have declared an interest at the very beginning of the meeting, because I live in Newry and Border Down District. I live just outside of Newry, and I'm sure you're all familiar with some of the images there across the top, all the way from Newry Town Centre, City Centre now, through to Patrick, Newcastle, and out as far as Camel Lake and so on as well, out in South Armagh. It's an extensive area, and our staff, we believe we work well right across the council area to bring our services, clean, safe drinking water for everybody, and wastewater treatment and collection away then to everybody right across the council area. We have a number of depots as well, and we have a depot here just outside of Newry, the Carn Bay Industrial Estate as well. And then beyond that, right across Northern Ireland, our staff are available to work with people like yourselves, your councillors, elected representatives, as well as your constituents and all of the customers on the piece. There's work going on right across the area here, and again, we've done some work in the past where we've kept a very strong eye on the council's strategy for growth and tourism and so forth. So we then try to mirror what we're doing and look ahead to your strategy to say, are we able to stay up to speed with that, and what investments might we need to make to complement your own strategy as a council? Steve, you just move to that next slide then, please. So the slide here gives you a bit of a sense of what we do, not unlike Northern Ireland Electricity Networks. I guess we have two key parts to what we do. We have on the left-hand side the water side of our business, the clean water side of our business, and on the right-hand side the wastewater side, or what's rapidly becoming known as the recycle part of our business, when people talk nowadays about reduce and reuse and recycle and what we do there. both of these are important. Clean, safe drinking water is always an absolute, our number one priority, because we have to make sure that, that the people right across your area have clean, safe drinking water every day, whether it's at home, in business, in school or hospital. And I won't go through everything there, but you can see across the schematic there what we do. So we serve all households and businesses right across the north. We have 23 major treatment works right across Northern Ireland. We operate 27,000 kilometres of water mains network right across the province. So an extensive network which again needs maintained and managed and monitored every day. And then we have a series of pumping stations to make sure that we are able to get that water distributed around the network to everyone's home. So when you and your constituents turn your tap on, or when you go to use water in a business, the water is available and you can depend on it, you can trust it and you can rely upon it. And then we have 366 service reservoirs. This is where the clean water is then sent to and stored, so it's immediately available for use when you turn on your tap. That's on the clean side. On the wastewater side, again, a lesser number of households and businesses, quite a few people, and your position will be the same, are on septic tanks. So I know myself where I live, I have a septic tank. I'm not on the wastewater network out where I live. But again, we have a task of being able to work with customers and empty those septic tanks for customers and take that waste away when it's required to as well. We have 16,000 kilometres of sewers across the province. Again, 1,300 pumping stations. We have a big extensive network to get waste back into treatment works. And then there are 1,000, just over 1,000 wastewater treatment works across the piece. Some of the big ones, from the very biggest one at Belfast through to some of the small ones that, again, you might be familiar with in some of the rural areas that we have. They all need operated, they all need maintained, and they all need to treat wastewater to the standard so that we can make sure where we can do, we're preventing pollution and anything that's entering back into the waterways, the rivers and so on, is cleaned to the standard that we're held to. And then we have a series of sludge management centres. When we've done all that and we've cleaned up the wastewater, and we have waste sludge that's left, and that has to be managed through our 66 sludge management centres, and then finally processed down at Dunkery Street in Belfast before everything is returned safely to the environment. So that's a bit of an overview of our network, and I'm sure many of you will be familiar with key parts of that across your particular areas and your constituencies. So some of the challenges that we're facing, they're both challenges and opportunities in many ways. And I'll talk through some of these. Again, I was struck by NIE's networks presentation. They talked about going from a 1.4 billion investment up to much higher. And we're doing the same thing in PC21, our current price control. So we have the same regulator as NIE Networks, and then our price control 2021, which is a 6-year price control out to 27. We have to make sure we're funding the requirements set by the regulator for us. So there is a continued funding dilemma and need through that PC21. I guess the key difference between us and NIE Networks is that NIE Networks shareholder essentially is the ESB on the island of Ireland, and they'd be held to account by the utility regulator if they didn't invest as a shareholder, if they didn't put the money up to make sure that the work was taking place, the investment that you heard the team from NIE Networks talking about, if that wasn't available and put in place, we would all hope, I suppose, here in Northern Ireland, we'd hope that our utility regulator and others would hold them to account for not having that investment available for need. Northern Ireland, one of the key differences, our shareholder, our sole shareholder, and our single source of funding is the government, the Northern Ireland government, the Northern Ireland executive. And again, we have to go, that's where we source our funding from. And as I'm sure many of you will be familiar with, the challenges that government are facing at the moment fiscally across the UK and that feeding its way into Northern Ireland, we are often tested and challenged that there may not be enough funding in place to carry out the investment needs as well as the funding in place to run the service day to day. Our colleagues at the Department of Infrastructure, which is the lead team for the shareholder, they work hard with us. They do a great job. However, some of the challenges that you'll be familiar with in Northern Ireland's finances will feed through to our investment program and our operational program. And that's something that we will continue to come back to. And we'll be happy to take questions at the end. In some respects, that then leads through to the second challenge, which is the development constraints. So in the same way as homes and businesses need to connect to an electricity network, we know that there are builders and developers and people building right across your constituency and right across Northern Ireland who need to connect, particularly to the wastewater treatment network. The water treatment network, the water network is more readily available. The wastewater treatment network needs a considerable investment if we are to be able to connect new homes and new development right across Northern Ireland. And that is a key challenge. I think that's a challenge that we've been headlining for a number of years now, and we hope to continue to garner support from elected representatives like yourself to make sure that funding's in place. You'll all be familiar, I'm sure, from your own discussions with contingency, with your own constituencies around the current energy market volatility. That's a big piece of challenge for us as well at the moment. And we're doing what we can do to maintain and to take the risk out of pricing on energy. But like many businesses at the moment, that is a day-to-day challenge. And again, that has put significant pressure on the money we require from government to run the business and provide the service. And then the final piece there, the climate change emergency, which is now passed into legislation in Northern Ireland. One of the last things that went through the Assembly before the Assembly then, I would say, went away. It was legislation for Northern Ireland on climate, net zero carbon and so on. We are working as part of that. We have, in fact, today I spent some time today with colleagues going through a draft emerging strategy for the climate change emergency for net zero carbon, as well as for resilience in our asset base. And we hope to launch that later this year and put that work underway. Parts of that are already underway. We hope to really push and grow that piece in the coming years if we're to meet the kinds of targets that we know we have to get to in this region. Steve, you can just move that next slide then. So before I hand across to Steve, I'll pick up here on this particular piece. So where are we looking at in 23, 24, particularly around our resource deal. So resource deal is where we get our money from Department of Finance and Department of Infrastructure to run the operation day to day. So it's to pay the bills, pay the energy, pay the rates, pay our staff, pay our contractor base as well on a day to day basis. And The budget, I think, for 23-24 went through Westminster just last week, late last week. So Chris Heaton-Harris, the Secretary of Northern Ireland, would have presented the Northern Ireland aspect of that through the piece. That already has significant cuts based within, not efficiencies, cuts based within it. We looked to push efficiencies, and we have been pushing efficiencies very strongly since we became Northern Ireland Water back in 2007. And we closed the efficiency gap between us and the UK and Scottish water companies. But what's in that budget now, if we were to adopt that budget, would mean an immediate set of cuts to our programme, which we don't think we can countenance, and we don't think there would be support, I think, around this call tonight for that either, because that will impact ultimately customers and your constituents on the piece. Whilst that's happening, we know that energy prices are continuing to move around, and there's been some downward movement in prices, but there is a more medium term view that says the prices will go up again, and they will probably stay up for the medium term. There is no view anywhere that says energy prices are going back down to where they were pre the Ukrainian Russian war and pre the exiting out of COVID and so on. Again, impacted by energy, but right across the piece, we know that the high inflation that we're dealing with right now in the UK's economy, and I guess economies more broadly. And that has a significant impact on the resources we need to deploy in terms of financing those resources to provide that service, whether it's the energy prices itself, whether it's to buy diesel for the fleet that we operate currently, or whether it's to buy some of the chemicals that we need to treat water and wastewater. Those have all been deeply affected by the headline inflation rates this year. And in many cases, some of those inputs for us, they're running at inflation much higher than the headline rate. So if inflation was a headline rate of 10%, we've seen chemical costs increase by upwards of towards 50%, and we've seen the energy prices go up five times from what they were before, before the Ukrainian-Russian war. What we don't want to do is dial back on the improvements we have made and continue to make to the service we provide to customers, and we certainly don't want to dial back on the investment that we need to put into the networks and the treatment through this current price control. Top left-hand corner, I think one of the comments that was made by Chris Heaton-Harris was the possibility of an introduction of water charges here in the north. And I think, as always, we would leave that to politicians. What we do is we operate the networks, we operate the services, and we don't currently have a plan in place that would implement water charges. That's a decision that politicians would make at some time. What we hope for, what we aim for, and we're asked that question quite often, is when people ask us as to our preference for charges, we simply answer very honestly, it is not our decision to make. What we need, what people in Northern Ireland need, is a model that is funded to the extent that it needs to be, so the services can be maintained and secured and the networks can be grown to allow for growth in our regional economy. I think, Steve, I'll pass across to you at this stage then.
Okay, thanks very much, Ronan. Okay, so this slide gives an idea of the capital expenditure that we've got planned for PC21, which is the blue line here. We've had full funding RFD in the first 2 years. A big step up is hopefully going to happen in year 2023-24, our third year. And then you can see our ambition to keep on investing and upgrading our infrastructure to give the people of Northern Ireland the service that they deserve. That investment needs to continue over future price controls. And you can see the step up from the average annual investment over our last 6 year price control from 150 million to up to about 490 million in year four. So a lot of that investment, over £1 billion, is in sewage provision. We keep the roof watertight on our house through base maintenance, planned and reactive, about £500 million. And then, as Ronan was talking, for water provision, we always protect that. That gets a significant investment, and any changes to our programme or any cutbacks would not affect the provision of clean, safe drinking water to the population. We've got our overheads, includes health and safety, and also planning for the future to make sure our company moves with the times and uses the best available technology and provides the best service for the funding that we have. If we look at what's happening in the council area and our investment plans for wastewater, we've got some significant investments targeted in Newry treatment works, nearly over £25 million there, Downpatrick and Annesborough. Warren Point, we're actually nearly completing that upgrade that will happen in 2023, and a further investment in Annalong. So it's not all about the treatment works. There's investment needed in the wastewater networks, and we have our drainage area plans for Ballina Hinch, Kilkeel, Dundrummond, and Annalong that we're keen to deliver on. If we look at the water services, we're going to invest in a large clear water tank at Fofany, nearly a £10 billion investment, and this gives you extra resilience in supply for customers in the Fofany Bain area. We're also investing in the Drummer Road water treatment works and looking at treatability improvements and implementing those. And we've got other investments that we've made and shared with the council in the past on the Moor Wall around our Silent Valley reservoir catchment. And if you roll that up over the whole of the PC21 period, we've got direct investment in upgrades in our assets of nearly £110 million. And then the indirect investment in base maintenance and health and safety, et cetera, another £110 million. So you're talking £220 million investment in the council area, subject to adequate funding of our business plan. We touched on development constraints earlier. It's an issue that affects the whole of the north. There's over 100 economically constrained areas across Northern Ireland that can affect local development. We hope to address 49 of these areas in PC21 we also predict during this time more constrained areas will arise over the 6 years. And about 80% of properties in Northern Ireland can be affected by wastewater capacity constraints in one way or another. Well, what does that look like in terms of the Newry Mourne and Down council area, in terms of the planning applications? Well, we've been collecting data over the last, 12 to 15 months. I've got the last 12 months here. Total number of applications in the council area was about 769. If we see how the applications fared, over 70%, 545, were approved with standard planning conditions. Okay. And what we found was that developers who didn't approach us early, because that's been our key message for a few years now, if they didn't approach us early, then we would have to refuse the application. Now, that's a strong word, but we've been advised to use that by our legal advisors. But you're talking about 12% there where we've had to say no or put in a refusal and then said, come back and talk to us. And we work with those developers. We conduct wastewater impact assessments, and hopefully then they move into the amber zone where it gets approved with a specific condition on the planning response. And about 17% of all applications received over the last year have been in that category. Okay. So I think the system we've got is working well, but it is about contacting us early and getting the necessary studies in place. Just more really on what we're doing to address capacity issues, just to say that it's a two-level approach. One is strategic, where we have the big investments that I've talked about earlier, and they will have to go in not only on this through this price control period, but over the next 12 to 18 years. Okay, this is to address the historic underinvestment in the wastewater systems. I've talked about the final determination. We had a 2.2 billion determination. We've had the first 2 years funded, but we do need multi-year funding and it to be ring-fenced really for us to deliver on the needs of the greater population. And what we're advocating is strategic phasing of land as part of local development plans. And that has to be, you know, with a mind to the infrastructure that's in place at the time and lead times for any future upgrade investments. And part of that is also really working with us for zoning land for new wastewater treatment works and new wastewater pumping stations. There's the tactical level, which I sort of alluded to earlier, which is where we're encouraging developers to work with Northern Ireland Water, contact us early. It can lead to developer-led and finance solutions where there's no other solution on the table. And these are very sort of bespoke site-by-site approaches. We've been responding to the issue over the last few years where we've developed a new project team, a new development constraints team. So we've put that in place to encourage and facilitate the early engagement and dialogue with developers and other stakeholders. We've toughened up and made more robust our planning responses with conditions, with all the support and information that we need. We're committed to using our infrastructure to the maximum degree to facilitate development, also to protect the environment. And we've been bringing in new resources using internal staff and also using our supply chain to bring in external support. And through this as well, we've developed new processes and procedures through that solutions engineering team. And it is having some success. This is really a sort of a diagrammatic overview, really showing our strategic capital program that we can do catchment transfers by moving effluent or storm out of one catchment into another to try and maximise our infrastructure to allow development. And this is an important diagram here about stormwater offsetting. It shows that under dry weather conditions, wastewater goes into our system, into our pumping stations, etc., onto our treatment plant without any bother, and the environment is protected. What happens is if you have heavy rains, then and that enters the system, then you have overflows, which is fine when you have large rainfall events affecting the environment as well, a lot of dilution. But if you have systems operating at capacity, then more concentrated effluent can get out into the environment. So we've got to protect. We have to adhere to the Urban Wastewater Treatment Directive, the Water Framework Directive. You know, those are big pieces of legislation that we need to operate in, and they're enforced by the NIEA, the Northern Ireland Environment Agency. Mentioned the phasing of development is key to trying to unlock constraints in certain areas, and we're looking also to new technologies, to smart networks, whereby we can anticipate storms coming, etc., pump down systems, get them ready in advance, and that'll enable us to operate our system in a smart way and maximise the capacity that we have. Here are some examples from the council area, mainly Newry, of our solution engineering team at work. This is to do with the Craigmore Way development. So there's a site here that's split in two. One phase has been built out, about 100 plus houses. There's another upper Craigmore Way phase where there are some capacity issues, and we're working with the developer there to look at how we can separate storm outside of the actual site that's going to be built on, somewhere else in that catchment area, to allow the capacity to be created and hopefully the connection can be made. So we're in discussion with the developer there. And on Cecil Street, a development with 15 houses. There's a storm water offsetting opportunity there, and the report will be issued soon to the developer. Here's a message really that we want to put out there, and with the help of the councillors, really, is to appeal to the general public as part of our NI Water winter campaign. We want the public to report leaks to the system. We want pipes to be lagged, farmers to check outbuildings and drinking troughs. And also it's important that businesses look at vacant properties, because that's where leaks can manifest themselves, and it can take a long time to address. And also education authorities to check their estates. And what we've found during the recent freezing temperatures, particularly before Christmas, there was an increase in bursts by 279% in our water mains. So these actions will not only help us, but they will help customers in managing their supplies, and also they don't receive any unnecessary larger bills. There's a range of contact ways of contacting Northern Ireland Water there, with email. We've got the 24/7 water line for the public, and of course there's the 24/7 elected representative hotline, and there'll be a link there that you can click on. I'll share the presentation shortly, and that'll take you through to an information leaflet. Okay, so that's it from me. I'm going to hand over to Ronan, who's going to sum up the presentation.
Steve, thank you. So I suppose in summary, look, you know, Northern Ireland Water, we need to make sure that the resource dealt funding that we have for critical service provided by us, as well as that sustained capital dealt funding for investing in the infrastructure that Stephen showed on the early graphic for that PC21 piece. The regulator approved a £2.2 billion investment plan. We've had the first 2 years of that invested more or less fully in terms of the capital side. We need to see that sustained and grown, because that's where we will make our investments in your area, as well as the other council areas right across the piece. If you know, without that sustained, adequate investment, I guess, you know, our society, all of us here in Northern Ireland, you know, we'll have to get to a point where we start choosing between environmental protection and economic development, and we shouldn't have to. I think we're going to need both. We want to see a strong regional economy growing here, and we want to own our part in doing you know, what we have to do for that. And at the same time, we want a clean, safe environment, pollution-free is absolutely as much where we can do, where people can enjoy living and working and so forth as part of that. And I think that's part of Northern Ireland's credentials, that kind of environmental kind of beauty spot and the environmental attraction as part of our region here. And we need to protect that as a society and as a government here as well. That needs to be protected. And the way we can do that is making sure that there's adequate investment in our infrastructure, so we can continue to drive our environmental standards to the levels required of us by NIEA and others. Steve talked about some of the development constraints and gave some good examples there within your own area as to where we are working with developers here locally to try and find a way of the stormwater offsetting, etc. We need to see more and more of that. We need to lean into that ourselves, and we need to work with the developers. And equally, the developers, the earlier they can come to us and talk about their schemes, the more chance we have of finding a solution that works with them. So we are engaging with developers on those engineering solutions right across the piece. And I guess I know at the moment we're without an executive, but the funding must be secured. The necessary funding has to be secured if we're to be able to deliver the investment in water and wastewater required for Northern Ireland. I'll pause there. We can take questions, Chair.
Okay, thanks, Roland and Steve, for a very comprehensive presentation. And I think we're all in agreement that we need to invest in our clean water and our infrastructure right across Northern Ireland. But, you know, having come across, I'm sure as other councillors have, developments that we're trying to get out of the ground, there are issues in relation to capacity, and that's something we've all got to work towards finding solutions to, should that be through investment or through engineering schemes. I have a number of councillors looking to come in here with questions. Councillor Curran.
Thanks very much, Chairman. It's just a very brief question until they got there. And thanks very much for your, excuse me, your presentation. It was very interesting to know what the position is in the, as far as water, the most important thing that we ever will have in relation to our council. But I think, Roland, you and I talked about this before in relation to the water pressure and down through our glass, which sometimes there's no pressure there at all and there's no water. And I was wondering, is any further advancement been done there?
So we have looked at that water pressure piece, and it's a continuing theme with us. So we had not just in Uri, but other areas where we had queries. And I know that we resolved some of those further on down around the coast from you, I think down towards Cranfield, places like that. I look specifically again into our glass and see where we are. What we did find during that recent freeze thaw that we had back in December, that can be an interesting story where pressure is lost through the system because it bursts. And I suppose that message we're trying to get back out to everyone around, even after the freeze thaw. So we had a busy time during the freeze thaw in December. I have to say our teams on the ground worked really hard and really well. And we avoided the kind of the worst of those things. You might have seen some of that on the TV in England where people were queuing up for water in some of the areas in the south of England. We certainly didn't want to see that back here in Northern Ireland. And I think the teams, I have to say, worked very hard to avoid that with customers. But our message out to customers is, if there's a leak on your ground or if you're particularly if you have extensive farmland and so on, get out and get it checked. And if there is a leak, try and get it fixed. And if you're not sure how to get it fixed, get in touch with us and we'll try and get you somebody to go out and get it fixed. Because when the system is leaking water that way, we're losing that water. And that has an impact on pressures as well. But Councillor Curran, I'll come back to you separately on what steps are being taken in the Ardglass area around that.
Thank you very much, Roland. I look forward to that meeting with you. And again, thank you and thanks for your presentation.
Thanks, Councillor Curran. Councillor McMurray.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Larkin and Mr. Blockwell, for the event. Just, I'll be very brief. It's risen a dundrum. We've spoken to this before. There's a moratorium on all development there. Would it be possible, I would like to extend this or wind this out to all Sleafcrib elected reps, would it be possible to get a site meeting with yourself or your engineers or someone to discuss that? Because it's a tedious ongoing thing, and I appreciate you've highlighted the issues around fundings, et cetera, but, For it seems to be an endless issue with no end in Dundrum, which is causing community groups, development associations, right the way through, some angst. So I think there's other councillors here from the Sleafcrib area, but they can be, you can catch up with them as well. But would that be possible?
I think that's a helpful suggestion. Right, and I think we would like to offer something out on site so we can arrange to meet down in that area and walk you through the work that we've been doing, because we've done some extensive integrated environmental modelling in that area, and that modelling work has thrown some new light on where the issue might be, and it may not necessarily be in Dundrum, but it may be up the net, up the catchment a little bit further on. That work, I think, Steve, that report that we commissioned and invested in has then been shared now with the Environment Agency.
Yes.
And we're waiting for the Environment Agency to adopt the recommendations out of that work, because I think that will begin to free up some of the catchment that and some of the area in Dundrum, which currently has a moratorium on it for development. So there is some positive news on that. But I think, Steve, I think it would be really helpful to meet some of the councillors down on the ground out there and to share the work we've done, share a presentation that we've done and let them know where we're up to. And perhaps we can take the Environment Agency along to that meeting with us.
Yeah, absolutely right, Roland. We're waiting for the NIA to come back to us, Councillor McMurray, that, once we have their input, then things will can move. But yeah, I think that we should meet, with the councillor and other interested parties with NIEA, and happy to do that.
Thank you very much. We'll
take that away as an action and be back in touch with that, because I know that the people in house who led the work for us, when they finished out the studies and examined the outcomes of those, candidly, they're excited about what they've seen. They think there's a way through this, but it needs rubber stamped and approved of by the Environment Agency.
Thank you. No, that's really positive to hear. And I say, certainly, yes. And it'd be good to meet the other councillors, the NIA and other stakeholders in the area. So that would be really good if that could be followed up. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay. You have enough, Councillor McMurray?
Yep. Thank you, Chair. Good luck.
Okay. Councillor McAteer, you have a question or comment?
Yep. Yeah. Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Ronan and Steve, for your presentation. I suppose maybe just before saying, following on from Councillor McMurray's suggestion there, I do think maybe even in your area where I know with the involvement of the planning committee, that you know there are areas of issue, I suppose, and I think that maybe if a meeting was to take place, or just a, I suppose a walk through of the situation on the ground, like advocating for Councillor McMurray in the Newcastle area, I think that or Dundrum, that would be very helpful as well, because we would maybe be able to see it firsthand, really what situation is and the practical side of your problems, etc. So maybe share that with us as well on this side. And I suppose moving on from that as well, you talked there about the local development plan, and I always heard in America they put the infrastructure, the success with a lot of the development in America is that they put the infrastructure in first and then build to it. And I know you're talking there about, you know, advocate phasing of development, you know. Now, we all know the pressure that there is to build more houses on the whole island of Ireland in a sense, and the repercussions of that, of achieving that. But as we develop our local development plan, you know, I wonder how much engagement that is planned, inter alia, between you and our planners, our senior planners who are working on this at the moment, so that, we will actually be able to deliver the houses that we see that the area needs and exactly where they are. And there'll be no nasty surprises when somebody tries to develop it, that you're looking at developer-led, developer input, which puts the house prices up. Do you know? So I would call for a visionary approach in the forthcoming years. I do welcome what you're saying there about the storm offsetting. I think that's very innovative, and certainly in certain ones that I know of, application seems to have been working well, but I think in the overall context of this, we need to be more imaginative and thinking ahead. And it is good to see, I do think, as by looking at your graph there, that funding seems to have increased over the last couple of years and is rising, which is very encouraging, because I know, Ron, you all put the plea in every year, to all ask all parties to emphasise how important funding is to this, and that is one sure thing. The years of neglect in the infrastructure isn't going to work, and it's going to hold the whole community up in every aspect of community development. You know, so inside that, you'll probably find a question or two there. Most of us comment. So thanks, Chair.
If I could just come in and comment on some of that. I mean, Northern Ireland Water began its existence in 2007, and we have pushed really hard on establishing, you know, the facts around a backlog of investment that wasn't there during the preceding years of that for a whole host of reasons in Northern Ireland. I'm sure somewhere in all of that there might be a legacy of the Troubles, etc., as part of that. We've then pushed for funding very hard, and we continue to do that. And I hope you can forgive me, but we'll not tire about asking that the funding that is signed off by the regulator that we should have is made available to us, because it's not for us, it's for people who use the network, it's for people who want to move into new houses, whether they are private houses or whether they are social housing. We've seen some great social housing being built across Northern Ireland. Those houses are very much needed, and we love to see those developments opening up and people moving into those connected to our network. But we need, yeah, you're absolutely right, Councillor. We coined a phrase a number of years ago, that we need to see cranes and drains, not just the cranes going up for the development. We need the drains in place. And you're right, it's better to build that infrastructure slightly ahead of need, because if you do that, you can meet the need as it arises. We're not in that situation in Northern Ireland. And that's why we would like things like to make, you know, we don't need to know just our funding for this year, 23-24 coming up. We need to know our funding out to the end of PC27, so we can plan and work with developers and work with the other infrastructure. We work with the housing associations and so on, to make sure that if we know what funding we're getting available to us, we can start moving ahead on the planning for some of that. We can start, you know, leading on that, as opposed to, you know, waiting to be told what funding we have and then try and go out and establish what we do with that funding. So My ask with all of you is, when you go back to your party HQs, put it on your list. One of the things you want the parties to talk about when they're at Stormont again is, how are we funding and how are we making that funding available, not just in year, but in the years ahead as well? Because Northern Ireland Water got a clear line of sight to the funding it needs to have in place in order to meet those infrastructure needs. And I know that in Newry recently, I think there were some good examples where developments were pivotal on having an approval based on stormwater offsetting and so on. I think it was one of Pierce's Gate, particularly there down in the Newry city centre. It would have been terrible to see that planning knocked back and not been able to go ahead, because that's development, it's housing, it's enterprise and business and so forth, and amenities for people, not just in Newry but across the piece. We want to see more of that, and we want to do what we have to do to support that. For that, we need surety and clear line of sight to the funding required. And by the way, when we are investing that money, that's good for our economy here in Northern Ireland. That's employment and jobs on the back of that, not just for our own employees, but for the contracting firms and the supply chain that work here with us in Northern Ireland. So when we're investing money, it's good for the infrastructure, and it's very good for the economy here as well.
Okay, thanks, Ronan. Councillor McKee.
Yeah, thanks, Chair, and thanks, Rowan and Stephen, for that presentation. Well done. You did mention there, Rowan, Cranfield got a mention. I was just interested in an update. A while back, I think a couple of different graphs were sent to me. Would it be possible to update me with the most recent ones, or at least the last couple of graphs, to see how that's going and how is it going? Is it going according to plan, and you're hoping for a certain date when there may be a start and point, because there was pressure tests being done, I know that, so interested to hear from you.
So again, at the time we spoke, we had asked our engineers to take a look specifically at that scheme that you had highlighted. And I can't give you an update tonight, but I can give you an update outside the meeting. I'll get that next phase of information. But your query into us got the engineers out there looking at that. They did the pressure tests, and they established where there would need to be further work. And I think the plan was to install a pumping station in on the ground. Steve, did you want to come in?
Yeah, no, I mean, we have done the work. We logged the network in Cranfield area between May and September 2022. So that's during the peak time, when you expect the most people to be in the area in the summer. What we found was that the network pressure did not drop below the minimum level of service, 1.5 bar. But during our investigations, we did find that there was one section of iron cast main, about 60, 70 years old, that is highly tuberculated, it's called. It means it's got a lot of sort of rough interior, and that can actually cause a bit of friction and slow down and cause a bit of a pressure issue. So we were going to address that, and I think that's going to start in February this year. And there may be some improvement to pressures in the customers in the area. But as I say, the minimum level of service from that extensive study over the summer showed that we didn't go below 1.5 bar. Okay.
So that's a helpful update, Stephen. Yeah. And I think that the 1.5 bar testing shows that that's in place. But that particular piece of very old main, the idea is to replace that. Mm. Is that right?
Yes.
And begin that work in February of this year. So by the time we hit, I guess hopefully by the time we get to peak season later this spring and summer, we'll have done that piece of work.
We'll have benefits.
And that old piece of pipe will be removed and replaced with modern pipe.
Yeah, that's good. That's good to hear that. And I know it mightn't drop for 1.5 bar, but you do know that there's times when in the peak period that the houses, outside of the caravan sites literally have no water. They don't have any water at all. So hopefully that is the issue. And the new pipe will, I think it's as low as maybe a 3 or maybe a 4 inch pipe. Maybe as low as a 3 inch pipe. I think there's others a 6 inch feed in, and it drop down where it can all be 6 the whole way through. And that should help the volume of water getting through to it. Do well. Thank you. Good work.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Councillor.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. I don't see any more comments or questions from members. So all that leaves me is to thank Ronan and Steve for their engagement this evening and their detailed presentations. I think we all have, like we did with NIE, have to work closely with NIE Water and their team to ensure that we deliver as much as we can for the people we represent. And again, thank you very much, gentlemen, for your input tonight and for your attendance. Thank you.
Thank you, and thanks all for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Good night, everyone.
Thanks, Chair.